If you want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media, you are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
Hello and welcome to the Canadian Philosophy Show. I am your host, Brandon, and I am joined by Hale for our media studies series. Today we begin to talk about a book by Hans-Jörg Müller. It's titled You and Your Profile. Hale, you suggested this book to me and I looked over it. We're going to be discussing the preface in the first chapter today. You've been engaged with Müller's work for a bit now, but this is the first real book by Müller that you've read, isn't it?
No, we've been doing this kind of media series for a while, and both you and I know have like quite an interest in media theory, philosophy of media. We've kind of read it in our own personal time, and then in various forms of the show here, we've brought up various thinkers like Walter Benjamin, Noam Chomsky. There's been a few others, and I know Neil Postman has come up quite a few times in our show. All, you know, very well-known media theorists in one form or another. And that kind of led me a while back into a rabbit hole of, you know, looking for good media theory content on YouTube and some other spots. And Hans-Jörg Müller started popping up a lot in my feed, probably somewhat ironically. We're going to be talking a lot about, you know, media theory in the modern age. And so anyways, and obviously YouTube being a very modern medium. Yeah, I started looking into some of his work, and he's very media theory focused. And then I came to realize through his YouTube channel that he actually somewhat recently published a book with another philosopher who's, to be honest, name skips my mind at the moment. We can look at the title if we want. But it's called You and Your Profile, as you said. And basically it's a new modern thesis on media theory, and particularly media theory as it relates to personal identity. And so, you know, for our listeners, kind of learning a bit of the background of what we're doing this, you and I started chatting and realized, you know, we've kind of been slowly making our way up the ladder, getting more and more present with, you know, the thinkers in the realm of media studies. And so we figured, you know, maybe a good place to land and work on for a while is something super current. Like this is theory about people experiencing media and how media and personal understanding, personal identity functions today for all of us, given our modern technologies and systems and mediums and stuff like that. And so we decided to jump in. And just to get some background on Hans-Jörg Müller, I don't have a huge amount, but other than his YouTube channel, it's called Carefree Wandering. Which is, I certainly recommend, and is relatively popular in the kind of YouTube philosophy niche, as much as something can be popular in that. He is a philosophy professor at the University of Macau in China, but he's German. If you watch any of his videos, he has quite a thick German accent. He very openly specializes in both Eastern philosophy and media studies.
Interesting, yeah. When I went to look up his other texts, it was actually a text on Zhuangzi, which I thought was interesting. I just also wanted to acknowledge the co-author Paul J. D'Ambrosio. Yeah, so it's interesting. The subtitle of this book is Identity After Authenticity. I mean, we've kind of been through culturally an identity crisis, all of modernity in a way. This is Identity After Authenticity. So I guess we're getting a little bit into the beginning chapter when we talk about this, but essentially what you see on the cover is Identity After Authenticity. So this is kind of a culmination of the work we've been doing in the media studies series. We've encountered various theoreticians of media. This is a step more. Most media theorists, they want to say that there is some kind of way that media shapes our lives, and that includes the way that we understand our authenticity. Müller's point is ultimately going to be that media has, or the way that the media is kind of constituted today, which he's going to call it has a profilic nature. It exemplifies profilicity it's kind of shedded that earlier project, all of the technologies and forms of media that we used to engage with the project of authenticity, of identity, and trying to figure out who we really are, has reached a kind of breaking point.
You know, from what you just said, there are two things really stand out to me. One, I just want to make a quick point for listeners. If they haven't, you know, tuned in to our previous episodes, or perhaps are not as familiar with, you know, media theories, media studies, philosophy of media, whatever you want to call it, is that when we say media or the media, we're not necessarily talking about the news media. We're more talking about conveyors of information of one kind or another, whether that be, you know, the text, the written word, whether that be the television, or whether that be the smartphone and the internet and social media and that kind of thing. And obviously that the last on that list there is going to be the most prominent within the context of this discussion, because that's what Mueller focuses on the most, which comes to that question of identity. And this is a really interesting point or avenue that Mueller's taken, because I haven't seen media theorists discussing specifically, that we've talked about before, discussing specifically or really focusing in on personal identity and social identity. That's always, for a lot of them, that's been kind of like sort of like a second order or background consequence of what they're talking about. But Mueller is interesting in his thesis in that he really focuses in on how is our current media really shaping or becoming the grounds of literally who we are. And when we talk about who we are, like within that context, you know, when I try to understand myself, how has that, Mueller basically puts out the thesis that there are certain consistent structures historically on how that process works. And that in relatively recent times, like in quite recent times, we've basically hit a watershed moment and moved into a totally new way of understanding ourselves. And to get a grasp a little bit on how important this kind of media side is, I actually want to read for our listeners the preface of Mueller's work, because it is really short. It's just a few sentences.
I wanted to do this too, because the stake is laid out here. This is what's on the table. This is the money in the pot, in a way.
So for the preface, Mueller writes, "The face in the mirror," and he says, "Identity enables us to accept the face we see in the mirror as our own. We need it for coming to terms with the grotesque mask that we see there, which cannot be stripped away. We must identify with this face so that it does not appear to us as an outrageous disguise, or if so, then just for a moment. When we leave the bathroom, we need to trust that the image we project expresses our thoughts and feelings quite naturally, and we need to prepare ourselves for the fact that everyone else will take this face to be precisely who we are." So this is one of those things, you know, you and I have talked a lot in the past. Makes me think, unsurprisingly, Heidegger has come up. Haven't really talked about Heidegger much as of late. There has to be a certain reliability in who I understand myself to be. You know, Heidegger talks about this a little bit more in terms of how one interacts with the world, more in terms of, like, I have this consistent self-conception. I never wake up in the mirror and look in the mirror and see someone else completely. You know, certain existentialists and stuff might talk about that as being a kind of alternative experience outside of the norm. But I think it's pretty fair to say that for most people, frankly, whether we like ourselves or not, we recognize the person in the mirror. But how does that recognition actually take place, right? Like, how does one actually understand who they are? And I think that this is probably a great spot for us to jump in and talk about, I think, what is really the groundworks of where Mueller is coming from, which is these different structures of identity that have very deep historical roots.
Yeah, and it's interesting that I'm glad you talk about you bring up its historical roots, because ultimately Mueller is going to kind of give us not a progress, but a linear history of the way that these identity modes have shaped up. It begins, so he has a, no, it's not simple, in that it's kind of gradient throughout, but he gives us a three-part structure. He says, initially we exist in this, and we'll define them later, but let's just get the map on the table. Initially, we exist in this identity mode of sincerity. Eventually, certain conditions in society change, thus initiating the identity quest of authenticity. And then again, certain conditions change and we enter a world of profelicity. What do those mean? Initially, in a sincere society, you are given roles. Society exists in a culturally embedded way, and that culture enables different roles that can be enacted. And your job in constructing your identity is sincere role enactment. So you're offered a particular role based on whatever conditions that your being meets with in society. And your job is to sincerely believe and live up to and enact and exist within the social world, that social role. That can be all kinds of things, you know. It can be things like class and gender identity and almost anything.
Yeah, Mueller really points out this is where people get their sense of value in terms of themselves and also value within the context of their community and their capacity to judge themselves and judge others, effectively creating a sort of moral system. We'll get into this, but sincerity is something that there's been a lot of pushback against over the past couple centuries, few centuries in particular. I think it's fair to say, or at least to assume on the face of it, that this mode of sincerity has been historically the most common identity-forming structure. One can imagine from tribal worlds right up to, you know, the early modern and perhaps even modern period, the world that people were born into was far more set in stone, right? There wasn't, this who I was very much rooted in where I came from and who my family was and what my position was in society. And Ms. Mueller talks about a lot of that was pretty much set out from birth, right? You think about, we can talk about something like, let's say, the Middle Ages would be a good example. You know, if I was born into a craftsman family, I would almost certainly never leave that social hierarchy. And I would almost certainly join that same economic and vocational world as well. And my personal identity and the value of my personal identity, basically my ability to look at myself in the mirror, would be deeply rooted in me being able to perform those roles well. It's almost so hard to imagine, but it's like, it would be very, in a medieval world, it would be very weird for a medieval peasant to imagine themselves and aspire to be more than they were.
I would need to find where this is, but I often get met when I think about stable social hierarchies in the Middle Age. You think about the great ladder of nature, the hierarchical existence that extends beyond the physical world and also into the metaphysical world. You know, you have God at the top, and then God has angels, and then below that you have us. There might be stuff around that, but then after that there are animals, and then there's plants, and then there's just the earth. So nature gets ordered in a particular way, and to think that there is any possibility of you sort of Mueller says specifically that self-cultivation is this acquiring the sort of attitudes and habits and whatnot of the role that you are. It's not the way that the person experiences their role is as who they are, that you are this particular class and whatnot. That has to be the experience of it. And he also stresses that all kinds of social and cultural justifications have to be given for this. There's a lot of buttressing going on here. Philosophical arguments have to be made. Metaphors have to be constructed. The great ladder of nature. It has to become unimaginable that you could be anything other than you are. Self-cultivation just is being that. We think of self-cultivation as, well, we're going to get to the top of the ladder. Self-cultivation means you have some potential inside of you that is more than you are, but really in the mode of sincerity when you are sincerely attempting to be what it is that you are ascribed to be. It is simply being that. The virtues are the virtues of this thing that you are. It doesn't set you up any higher than that.
Yeah, and you know, and we'll get to this, but like the big contrast between sincerity and then we'll get to authenticity is authenticity has this very internal dimension that we'll obviously talk about, but sincerity is out in the open. Your identity is who you perform as out in the world, as, you know, the peasant, as the scholar, as, you know, the priest, as the king, right? And as you kind of said, and Mueller brings up, like, there was a lot of social buttressing going on. You know, one of the most obvious ones was kind of the universality. If we're going to talk specifically about, let's say, medieval Europe, but this was pretty universal throughout the world, the hierarchies set and understandings, the sort of ontology set up by, you know, universally adhered to religion, right? This is the world. It is set up this way. We ostensibly know that it's set up this way, and there's no room to break out of it. As a matter of fact, it doesn't actually make, it's not really sensical to think outside of the system. And it's like a note to this, as just a little bit of like lay history and stuff, you can see in some ways sincerity function, at least in this sorts of periods, because things like revolutions were relatively uncommon. You would see usurpation and coups or whatever you want to call them within the context of like the upper echelons of society, right? You know, brothers of kings taking thrones and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, peasant revolutions, for example, this idea that like the common people, hey, this system is unjust. We're actually, you know, free individuals and we're going to make our own decisions collectively. That kind of thing very, very, very rarely happened. And I think part of that is because it's relating back to the system that Mueller's talking about here, where if I and everyone around me believes that the system that we live under was set up by God, then like there is no questioning the system. Like, and especially,
yeah, it's just not possible. The conditions aren't there for any kind of movement. And that's the important point, is that it's the conditions that change, and it's the conditions that change that lead to a social, an overall social change towards the identification mode of authenticity. It is the opening up of things like the possibility of social mobility. It is the spread of the Enlightenment and the promotion of this idea of human autonomy, that there is an inviolable region of the human that cannot just be subject to being placed below or under any other human, that all humans are created equal. And it begins this kind of quest of figuring out, okay, well, if that's what we are, and if we, using this way, we kind of depart from the role-based forms of identification, identity becomes a problem. You have to figure out who you are. And that figuring it out is the project of authenticity.
In sincerity, you really find identity is basically equivalent to this sort of inbuilt commitment to who I am. I'm committed to these social roles. I'm committed to this world. I think sincerity is such an important way of putting it, because that commitment is sincere. It is not like a commitment to, you know, a means to some kind of end. It's the end in itself. I really believe that's who I am. But the problem with that commitment and where we see things kind of break down is that, as we kind of talked about, it doesn't allow the sort of questioning that is, that, you know, it's not, it's a very rigid system. In a way, it's kind of fragile. It, when you have like a commitment to the world being a certain way, you're basically saying that, like, you know, I guess you could even say like the delusion of that system is that like the sincerity means that any other sort of perspective is not real. And if those, you know, so then what happens when, you know, we're, you know, people are faced with information, people are faced with evidence, people are faced with movements that sort of break down that system, right? It's not like it can then like sort of adjust. It's either kind of on or off. And that's where we transition to this sort of world of authenticity, as in the early modern period.
The movement towards authenticity being the mode of self-identification comes about through particular social changes. It's interesting because it isn't, as you said, it's not this clash of one system kind of meeting another. Really, two cultures aren't really assimilable in that way. You can't really take on one role or the other. It has to be within its own terms. But somehow, authenticity emerges out of this. I guess it has to do with the concern that one really is living up to one's role. And then when you find out that all the roles are leveled, it's a bit reductive, but I'm going to essentially chalk it up to the Enlightenment. Essentially, because of the Enlightenment, and you have this total leveling of all roles to total equality between all people, you have this internal singular human, this person that you are. And since it isn't given to you, it isn't prepared in advance by your culture or society, you kind of have to figure it out for yourself. Kant can tell you all the categories of the understanding, but you aren't, again, you aren't reducible to something given to you. You have to figure that out. Identity itself has become a problem, and your job, the attempt at self-identification that was pretty simple in the mode of sincerity. You just had to find the role and self-identify with it. Now self-identification becomes, you have to figure out the end of that self-identification. You have to figure out, okay, well, is this job really the job that I want to be doing? Is this particular company the company that I want to keep? Is this religion the one that I want to practice, etc.? You have to figure all of this out for yourself. Everything else, and the other thing about this that Mueller talks about is that all of these things, they're kind of, I want to say their ontology changes a little bit. Whereas before, everything was given to you and you put that on and that's who you were. Since everything is kind of taken after your own consideration, they start to feel a bit distant. They feel like, you know, we use the term second nature, but here I'm kind of thinking of like third nature. It's not something that always fits. The mask is always an approximation for this ineffable somebody underneath the mask. And as long as you are staying true to that ineffable somebody inside, you know, you can approximate, you can pick the mask that works for you, but you'll never really get there. And that changes people's relationships to those external manifestations.
Masks and faces are motifs that come up a lot in Mueller's, you know, discussion here. In sincerity, we effectively place a mask on our face, look in the mirror and say, you know, that is who I am. Like I am that mask. I don't even see myself differently. And the big revolution with authenticity was basically recognizing, you know, masks. People put on masks, people wear masks. Society encourages or forces or coerces people to wear masks. But those masks can't be taken off. And new ones can be put on, and people can go in different social roles. And, you know, basically authenticity in a way opens up possibility in a way that wasn't there in sincerity. You know, and actually I think I'm going to, you know, speaking about this sort of mask motif, I'm just going to read a short section here from Mueller. He says, the image of an authentic self as a true face of a person that comes to the fore once one's social masks are taken away is still popular. In authenticity, one's face is expected to accurately express oneself, a mask that is not a mask. One's true self has to be found or created. That this may be an impossible task is indicated by suspiciously frequent use of tautological phrases such as truly authentic in self-help manuals and authenticity. I can uncover myself. I don't have to completely identify with these social roles, and I can figure out who I am, who I want to be, and that like being authentic, one really always already is displaying who they truly are in whatever situation they might take themselves up in. You know, Mueller points out and stresses a lot through the work that this mode of identity, authenticity, has really shaped the modern world. you know, discussions about around human rights, personal rights, legal rights, expectations on, you know, who is a good or attractive person or moral, is all deeply rooted in this sort of highly personal independence, right? That the most important thing is your freedom, your ability to express yourself and be who you truly are and to figure out that journey. And that's, you know, that's really being a human being, is that's what finding your identity is all about. And yeah, like that is not just the core of philosophy before this, but it was like, that is really the core in many ways of our legal codes, international legal codes, social order. And as Mueller stresses out a lot too, our economic systems as well, and our social roles within the context of economic systems. One of the great quote unquote great advances of, you know, neoliberal capitalism and that whole kind of system structure is choice, right? The ability for you to go out and quote unquote choose who you're going to be by the jobs that you have, the people that you associate with, and the products that you consume and buy and produce. And Mueller really stresses that is a huge part of authenticity.
Yeah, this perfect domain of personal choice, that when one goes out, they always have, there's never this coercion of necessity, that one is given this and that is all that there is on offer. One always has some way of expressing oneself through one's personal choices. And I should, and I think that this is a, I'm glad you read this, because it kind of, I should check my own reading a little bit. One of the important things about authenticity is that it is the mask that is not a mask. So when I said, you know, you never really kind of get there, that's us peeking behind the mask a little bit. But the authentic person really is the person who has put on a mask, and that mask is them. And just in the same way that the sincere person puts on the role and that is them, the authentic person is never, they're always choosing, they're always deliberating, but they're never entirely cynical or doubtful of who they are, even if there are these paradoxes, you know, at second blush, that, well, all of the choices are not, you know, I can make my choices, but the choices are not created for me. The project of authenticity itself is not an entirely self-chosen project. One is initiated into this always already cycle of determining who one is. So this, there are cracks in the mask, but to the truly authentic person, there is no mask. The mask is no mask. I just want to remind our listeners that you've been listening to the Canadian Philosophy Show. We are talking about Hans-Georg Mueller and Paul J. Tambrosius, you and your profile. We're just discussing the main modes of identification in outline, and we have discussed the first two, sincerity and authenticity.
You know, authenticity in some ways is still the gold standard. It's also a mode heavily promoted. It is still held up today as a kind of virtue to be authentic. Mueller doesn't shy away from the fact that authenticity, you know, the mode of authenticity has some real critical structural problems. And one of them is that this whole project seems kind of contradictory. And this is something that's always stuck with me in our previous discussions with existentialism, is authenticity is kind of about this independence, what's about figuring out who you are and understanding yourself and doing that and doing it for you. And that's why you need to listen to me. That's why you need to read these books. That's why you need to read these self-help books. That's why you need to read this philosophy. That's why you need to listen to these examples. That's why you need to go out and do this. And it's kind of like, there's always this weird tension where it's like, I should be who I am and do that independently. And the reason I'm doing that is because other people are telling me that's what I should be doing.
Yeah, the project of authenticity is something that you take up. by and has been created for you by generations of existentialist and modernist thinkers.
And Mueller's, you know, doesn't shy away from pointing that out, that there seems to be this kind of odd tension. And it's only gotten, you know, worse. This authenticity as a concept has been taken up by, you